Welcome to All About Business with me, James Reed, the podcast that covers everything about business, management, and leadership. Fresh from the holidays? It's time to get back to business. Welcome to our top summer takeaways. Here are some of the very best nuggets from our podcast guests to help you spark ideas, build momentum, and help you hit the ground running this autumn. We all face pain and setbacks in life, but how should we frame them so they fuel us forward instead of holding us back? This is top takeaway number one from my conversation with Rob Moore. He talks about mission, resilience, and perspective on challenges.
You know, there's the simple saying, it makes you or breaks you. So everyone listening, including us, have had trauma and hardship. Does it break you, or do you tap into it and go, never again? And I'm still running away from some of my pains, thankfully, them helping me towards success and wealth. So that's one way of staying hungry. The other one is having a really big mission. The bigger the mission, the smaller the problems and challenges. And, you know, if you can focus on something much bigger than you, you're always moving towards something. Imagine playing snakes and ladders and getting to the square 100, and then it's like, oh, actually, it's a 200 square game. Oh, actually, it's a 400 square game. You know, people who play computer games, they don't get upset when they complete the level. They get excited about the next level. So you always need like a next level. In fact, people who play computer games probably get a bit, oh, I finished the game. What now? So you want to see business and life like snakes and ladders, but it never ends. Or a computer game where once you complete the game, there's actually another game that unfolds.
But you said, and I just want to clarify my understanding, the bigger the mission, the smaller the problem. And so what you're saying, I believe, is if you've got a huge, big goal or you're trying to do something very substantial but really changes things, you have a problem like maybe running out of money doesn't seem quite so sort of desperate. Is that right?
That's exactly that. So I'll give you an example that I have. Yesterday, my head of marketing resigned. She's actually starting her own business.
Well, maybe you inspired her.
Well, I did. Yeah. Too well. Yeah, but actually, I'd rather that. And actually, that gives me a sense of pride. But, you know, I'm sat here and probably right up there with my MD, the most important person in my company is the head of marketing because we're a marketing business. But because I know I've got a global mission, because I want to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge, I'm not sitting here focusing on that problem because I've got a bigger vision. And it's frustrating because the last head of marketing maybe lasted a similar amount of time, and it's one of our most important roles. So if I wanted to, I could get really into the depths of difficulties and depression and frustration, and I could start going into blame. But because I have a global mission and vision, I know that's fine. I've kissed a couple of frogs, as it were. Just need to keep looking. I mean, I went through so many PAs until I found my great PA. My MD, she's been with us 14 years. First MD, stay with us ever since. Sometimes you get lucky or you do it well. Other times you kiss a few frogs. It's just the way it is.
Business leaders often rely on spreadsheets. But can you really know if you're running your business in the best way by looking at data? This is top takeaway number two from my conversation with Neil Clifford, CEO of Kurt Geiger. He talks about how he gets his answers from people, not numbers.
So I was in charge of 20 stores. And then Steve Robinson, and also a friend called Paul Sweetnam, who was very, very important to my career, sort of saw the fact that I had this ability to connect people. And there was a job sort of created for me called branch merchandiser. So I got my first company car, Renault 5 Turbo, age 21.
Right.
G-Reg. Love that car, navy blue, gorgeous thing. And I used to bomb around the United Kingdom, visiting all of our stores.
Right.
2-3 times a week. And then I would be in head office. So I had this, you know, I suddenly become a head office person on Oxford Street.
Yes.
And I would connect the stores to head office, which I'm still a big believer in. I drive everyone mad a little bit at Kurt Geiger saying, you know, the answers are in the shops. Not in the spreadsheets, or certainly not
like
all
that
the
line.
Not all the
get out there.
Get out there. Listen. Talk to the staff. Talk to the managers. They know all the answers. They know why the the shoes aren't fitting or you know, whatever the issues are, you normally discover the answers in the problems are in the spreadsheet. The answers are in the stores.
Right.
So I had this job where I was connecting store performance to head office. And that was a lovely job. I love that job. But I never read anything at work, really. I don't read the sales reports, really.
How do you get the information? Talking.
Listening to people, yeah.
Talking and listening.
Mm.
I think that's a big feature of business leaders.
I think for me, dyslexia is a superpower now. I mean, it was incredibly frustrating and in at school, but because I don't look down, though this is my little story or my, I'm never looking down and reading stuff. I'm always looking up. I'm always, you know, looking in people's eyes and listening.
You mean physically?
Physically. Yeah. So right. I think I'm a better judge of people than some because I put more effort into trying to study human beings than I do spreadsheets or words.
Very interesting. Because so many meetings now, there's a lot of people sitting around the table with a computer screen or a laptop.
I don't look at any of it.
You don't look at any of it?
No.
You look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn.
Mm.
Just by looking.
And, you know, if you're the store manager in Woolwich and half your staff are nicking and then the customers are sometimes threatening you with a syringe of blood for a leather jacket, you know, in 88 when the whole, AIDS thing was, yeah.
Wow.
You know, you get to understand the human race and the good ones and the bad ones. You end up being quite a good judge of character, I think.
Yeah.
In life with experience, really, don't you? I adore people.
All of them?
Yeah, in general, yeah. I think 95% of human beings
are
very decent. Yeah,
so
very
talk me through that. What do you like about them especially?
Well, I think I find them as my fuel, really, my energy. You know, I can't work in isolation. I can't work on my. Well, I can't work. You can't really work from home as a CEO, really. Anyway, can you?
No, I agree with that.
And thank God.
You can't be a miserable CEO working. That would be a good example.
I think it's ridiculous, frankly. But my motivation, energy, my learning comes from engaging and working with people because people find the solutions, not computers or spreadsheets, you know.
If, like me, you run a business or manage a team, you'll know how important it is to hire great people. Over the last 65 years, Reed has worked with thousands of businesses around the world, helping them to recruit and to grow. This is what inspired us to create Reed.ai, your new AI hiring agent. It's here to save you money, to save you time, and to help you get the right match. Whether you're hiring your first team member or your 50th, Reed AI is here to make it easier. Try it free for 28 days, exclusively available during our beta period. Go to Reed.ai and get started. Reed.ai, your higher power. With thousands of new apps launching every month, how do you make sure yours doesn't fade into the App Store graveyard? This is top takeaway number 3 from my conversation with Michelle Kennedy. She talks about early growth and seeding strategies to get users on your app from day one.
There are thousands of apps released to the App Store every month, thousands, and we'll never hear of them. They'll never get anywhere.
No.
And it's not good enough to say, well, I'm just going to run some ads on Meta.
Yeah.
That won't do it either. So I think that you have to have a seeding plan. Who are the people that you're going to seed this with? Are they going to evangelize about the product so that they kind of share and do the hard work for you? And from there, can you get enough momentum that you then start plugging in other marketing strategies? And for me, it was those 200 women.
So the people you
interviewed
to before.
Absolutely.
So got them all on there.
Day one, I was like, launches tomorrow. Do you want to try the beta? And they already feel a connection with the business.
And 200 was enough.
It was enough to get going. And then I was very fortunate that
we got.
So
you use your research pool
exactly.
to get going.
They feel an emotional connection to it because they've already answered questions. They already are interested and nosy enough to go and test it. And from there, it can grow.
So you call that a seeding strategy?
Yeah, seeding.
I like that expression.
Yeah, so you just gently seed with different people and see, and it's just about understanding that.
So you got started But now you've got 5 million. So do they refer people? Is there
absolutely
a referral?
Yeah. So you can refer
your friends.
Exactly.
Come and join us.
Invite your friends.
That's the seeding strategy for those listening who want to get going. Is a good example. And using your research base to do that.
Absolutely. And think about who your desired audience is. You know, if you are building a SaaS business, go into that business and say, look, I'm building this and can I give it to you? Can you trial it for me for free? And that's the best use case that you can get. You get to see it in the wild. So there's always an example of how to get it out there and be able to observe it. And the starting point doesn't need to be building an app. Oh. That always makes me anxious when people say they want to.
Where should the starting point be?
You can build an environment to test something. And it's so, so brilliant now,
the
advances.
When you say environment, what do you mean?
So it might be, if you wanted to build a community product, for example, you don't have to build a community app. You can build a WhatsApp group. It's free.
Right.
You can test, can you get people to join that group? Can you get enough engagement going? What are they talking about? You can create these environments in whatever scenario might best suit your business.
Readily available technology
absolutely
to start with.
And AI is incredible now. You know, there are no-code solutions where you can build something very, very inexpensively and test it before you go into the real
depth. Just ask AI to do it.
Well, get a clickable prototype, get it in people's hands, watch how they use it. It's very easy to do. There are tools like Figma where you can do that.
Right.
There are amazing things that we should all be doing now. So
this is all about sort of bootstrapping something.
Absolutely,
way,
and
it's
go
not,
and test
not
it.
Not finding huge amounts of money to build something.
You know, exactly.
You can start
you
really
can
small.
Start. Exactly.
And find out a lot and learn a lot and take it from there.
Exactly.
Many great ideas never come to fruition when people listen to that voice in their head. Is it too late for me to pursue something new? This is top takeaway number 4 from my conversation with my wife, Nicola Reed. She talks about why it's never too late to start a business and how mature experience can complement younger energy. Nicola, I hope you don't mind me saying, but you started your business in your 50s. And you know, some people listening might be thinking, well, too late, or I'm past that, you know, stage of life where I'd be thinking about starting a business. What would you say to them?
Well, I remember I've only been to Japan once, but I spoke to a woman there who said that typically when you retire in Japan, age about 60, you learn a language and a new language. And I felt really inspired by that because it just felt like a really optimistic, great thing to do at quite an old age. and I think if you have a passion, you should follow it. And I found beekeeping and thought, yeah, I really want to do this. And I don't think age should ever hold you back. It's, you know, if you have a passion, you've got to, there's a book you want to write, write it. If there's a business you want to start, start it. And it just does not matter what age you are.
That's a very good message. Is there any sort of, excuse for people? Do you come across people saying, yeah, I'm not going to do that because X, Y, and Z?
I think that's right, but it's always just about confidence. And I think that's why Matthew was brilliant, because he gave me the confidence because he was so, you know, excited to be on the journey with me. So, I was lucky that Matthew found me, but I think that you know, if you have a passion, you should follow your dream and you should make it happen.
Well, that's so interesting, but also maybe look for other people to share that passion.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can support each other and energize each other. And
you're never too old.
Running a business is ultimately about working with people. But what do you do when things or people stop working? This is top takeaway number 5 from my conversation with Reggie Hayworth. He talks about leadership, culture, and building positive energy in teams.
I think we all make the mistake of trying to make things work after their lifespan has clearly gone wrong. And you know, I'm sure you know in your heart, if you know your business as well as you and I do, and your people as well as you and I do, that they're not happy. It's not working. They've got to go. And we just try and make it work. We pour a lot of energy into it and it's very sapping. And it still doesn't work.
No. I mean, nothing lasts forever, does it? but it is a difficult journey. And you're, I mean, that you're saying, of, I think, you know, if you're starting to think something's not working, it's probably not working. And that's the
fine. Well, you want to, obviously you got to, you do your best to make things work. One of the people I met, had the privilege of meeting once, was Clive Woodward, the chap who took England to their only World Cup. Rugby.
Yeah. Triumph. 2003.
And amazing. And after that, sometime after, he became director of football at Southampton. And I was taken down there to a game and I was introduced to him. I knew I had one chance to ask a question. And I said, very nice to meet you, Sir Clive. I'd love to know, what's your secret to building a good team? And he didn't pause for a second. He just looked at me and said, get rid of negative energy. I've never forgotten that. And it was such a good, it was so simple. And if you're running a people business, which essentially is what I am, and of course, you know, it's animals are the most important thing on one level, but it's essentially a people business. You know, this thing of keeping people happy, keeping your staff happy, keeping them engaged, and making sure that there's a positive energy around the place. And interestingly, in their different ways, the four people who had to go, I think were not very happy in the job and probably had become or were seen as negative energy by some of their colleagues or would have felt that way. And it was very interesting how it played out. But I think Sir Clive Woodward was really onto something there. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons he was such a success.
That's good. Get rid of negative energy.
Thanks for listening to Summer Takeaways. Tune in next time for part two. I'm your host, James Reed, Chairman and CEO of Reed, a family-run recruitment and philanthropy company. If you'd like to find out more about Reed, all links are in the show notes. See you next time.